honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, focusing on the 33,000 American men and women of Japanese ancestry who served in our armed forces during World War II, many of them doing so while their family members were still held captive by the very country for whom they were risking their lives. Sam Terasaki wasn't in Europe all that long with the go-for-broke soldiers of the 442nd Regimental Combat Team, but it was long enough to experience some very close calls.
So how close did German mortar rounds come to your position?
We were leaving a fort in North Italy, spent the night in the fort, old fort, ancient fort that had a moat around it, bars on the windows. When we left there, we were shelled that night, but the artillery shells hit the wall, so all it did is kind of knock the breath out of us, but it didn't penetrate the walls because they were so thick. But when we pushed out of there, we followed this stone wall that bordered the roadside. Just then a mortar attack happened. Turns out that one of our jeeps was just coming back, and I think he must have been a forward observer or something from ahead of us. For some reason, he stopped there. There's a wall in between us and where the jeep was and where we were resting, and mortar shells came down. Next thing you know, the guy's laying on the ground. One of our guys is laying on the ground on the road, hollering, "Medics, medics." So I think it was Mike and myself jumped over the wall and went over there and put a bandage on his calf. He was had a bad slash, a shrapnel slash on his calf. We all carried this first aid thing. It's a pad where you put it on there and then tie it as tight as you can. Compress is what it was. That's closest I came to a mortar attack, I think. On the 5th of April, I don't think we were exposed to as many mortar attacks as we were to artillery and to grenades, rifle grenades.
And you told us about the grenade that landed on the other side of the rock.
Yeah.
Were there other situations that you look back on now and say, hey, that was pretty close?
Oh, I guess in one town, as we pushed forward in Italy, in one town, we were getting shelled. Fortunately, one of the shells didn't hit us, but hit the house down the road from us. I think it was some B Company guys got killed then. I jumped in a haystack. The Italian farmhouses had their animals on the first floor and their living quarters on the second floor. This is on the first floor. Jumped in the haystack, not realizing the place was full of fleas. I fought the fleas for the next 2 months.
Regretted that decision?
Well, I itched a lot, scratched a lot.
I guess it would be worth it if being in the haystack saved your life.
That's right. And it just so happened that the guy that was driving the truck full of artillery shells or whatever it was parked the car and ran into the house, and here's this truck loaded with ammunition. And of course, the Germans didn't hit it. Been one hell of an explosion. I don't know what the name of the town. You know, as a infantryman or mortarman, you don't get the latest news. In fact, some of the old-timers knew that the war was going to end then. We never knew that.
When did you figure it out, and what did it mean to you?
Didn't believe it. We were in a town in northern Italy after we had captured a number of Germans and had them on the run. I was in a town, spent a miserable night in this town square, rained all night, covered myself with my shelter half, and woke up in the morning and all kinds of native Italians running around said the war is over. I didn't believe them, but it was shortly after that an observation plane flew over and dumped the bundles of the Stars and Stripes and said the war is over. That's when I knew.
How big of a relief was that?
Oh, you don't. I remember none of the guys jumped up and down or anything. It just kind of took it as a matter of fact. We were happy that it was over, and it was a day or two later we had a memorial service at an abandoned warehouse. Our chaplain delivered a sermon and read the names of all the guys in the 100th from the first one that was killed down in Salerno. Mm-hmm. Very sad. Couldn't help from crying.
I believe it. And I'm sure even though, as you're telling it, there was only about a month that you spent in real intense combat. That had to be the longest month of your life, right?
Yeah, I think so.
And there had to be days in there where you thought your name could have been one of those that chaplains read.
Well, maybe wondered why I'd survived and the others didn't.
Did you have days where you thought that was going to be it? Did
you? Oh, sure, yeah. Pray to God when we're under artillery fire that the next one wouldn't come over and hit us.
It's got to be a pretty helpless feeling.
It is. What do? Put your hands over your head and hug the ground as much as you can and hope that you don't get hit. I know I recited the Lord's Prayer all the time.
I'm just imagining being in those shoes and how lonely and scary and just difficult that must have been.
It was. It was scary. When your legs start shaking, you can't stop it from shaking. That's when I knew I was scared.
And you mentioned that memorial service while you're still there in Italy, and the war has just ended, and they're reading off name after Japanese surname. Some of those guys are probably guys you knew.
Yeah.
And you told them, you're crying.
Yeah.
How should we today remember those guys whose names you heard read that day?
Well, I don't know. I just live a good life. Pay them back by living a good life and being tolerant. You know, when I joined the outfit, from the old-timers, I heard maybe three or four names of guys that they all looked up to. One of them, who was our chaplain, Israel Yost, Pennsylvania Dutch chaplain, that never knew what an American of Japanese ancestry was. In fact, he was given the option of not being in the 100th Battalion if he didn't want to be. I told him that this is made up of all Japanese Americans, and you don't have to be part of it if you don't want to. And he says, no, it makes no difference to him. He wanted to be a combat chaplain, and that's what he did. So he was one of the guys that all of the old-timers used to talk about, because he wasn't the chaplain that stayed in the back. He was a chaplain right up there with the medics, retrieving bodies, giving the last rites, things like that. Two more. Fukuda ended up as battalion commander in the end. Didn't have to lead the Fukuda task force, which was actually just, I think, one or two jeeps going from the last place in northern Italy that we went to. They drove all the way up to the Swiss border. He very well could have been shot by a sniper or something. A Korean-American who was our battalion intelligence officer. They were aware of the friction between Koreans and Japan.
Yeah.
So they gave him also the option. Of course, he says, I grew up in Los Angeles. My father had a grocery store there. I have a lot of Japanese-American friends. That makes no difference to me. He gained a lot of respect. When the 100th Battalion was Anzio, they needed information. He crawled on his belly and took two non-coms with him, crawled on his belly all night and grabbed a couple of German prisoners and made them crawl all the way back, and they got information.
Sounds like those guys set a pretty powerful example.
He did.
Were you excited to come home?
Oh, absolutely. Even though it was a slow ship. I went over on the Queen Mary, which was a fast ship.
Yeah.
Came home on a victory ship, which was a slow ship. But we were bringing home the regimental colors in the summertime, sleep on the deck at night, ice cream every night.
Hey, hey.
Movies. When we hit New York Harbor, because it was a big celebration that the city of New York and the Army put on for us, welcoming the regiment home, big to-do in New York Harbor, and then preparing to march in Washington, D.C.
What was that like?
I think we drilled for almost 2 weeks at Belvoir, Virginia, across the Potomac from D.C., got new uniforms and everything. And then they went over to D.C. and it was a rainy day, but the story goes that asked Truman, he said, in light of the weather, you want to cancel, you know, and he says, no. He supposedly said, what these boys been through, what's a little rain? So He came out of the White House to the Ellipse, which is a oval-shaped area across from the White House, and we passed in review, and he had a rain trench coat on and pinned the presidential unit citation on our regimental colors and welcomed us home.
Quite the contrast from being told you're 4C.
Well, it is. Thinking back makes you wonder. Roosevelt, I don't think he really knew the character of the Americans of Japanese ancestry that lived in this country. He was born and raised in New York, and I don't think there are very many Japanese back there.
I've noticed a few times now that every time you refer to it, you use the verbiage, Americans of Japanese ancestry. You don't want a hyphen in there anywhere.
No.
Why is that?
I've been approached by a number of people, and because of my facial features and stuff, they say, are you Japanese? I know what they mean.
Right.
But I make it a point to say, no, I'm an American. Not to embarrass them, but what they have to realize is that America is made up of all different ethnic groups. And I'm an American, and I just happen to be an American of Japanese ancestry.
And when you are in front of the White House with the President of the United States pinning the highest honor he can give to a unit on your unit colors, I guess you guys proved how American you were.
Never occurred to me.
And you said something to me. You'd be eligible for a Bronze Star for having been a combat soldier in Europe. You'd be eligible for a medal from the French government for helping to liberate that country. And you have not taken advantage of those opportunities. And you told me that the things that mean the most to you are that PUC, that Presidential Unit Citation, and your Combat Infantry Badge. Why? Why do those two decorations give you pride?
I've seen too many guys who deserve more than they got. One of the things that when I went over and we're in our off times, we'd talk about it, and you know, the guys would say, well, you know, so-and-so should have gotten a Medal of Honor. He didn't. He got a Distinguished Service Cross instead. And it said, all in how you write it up. And apparently our higher-ups didn't know how to exactly write up a citation. That was part of it, and probably a lesser part than the fact that they weren't about to give a Congressional Medal of Honor to. There was even controversy about giving a Congressional Medal of Honor to Munimori.
Well, and the thing that backs that up is what President Clinton did in the 90s,
yeah,
which was upgrade some of those Distinguished Service Crosses to Medals of Honor for guys like your friend
Joe
Sakato here in Denver.
So I told my son and my family, they, why didn't you apply for those? Medals don't mean that much to me.
I do want to ask you about one other medal, though, because this was in the last decade here. 60 years after the war, they say the Congressional Gold Medal goes to all Nisei veterans.
And my son, I wasn't even going to go to that, but my family insisted I go, and they said, well, you need an escort. I said, I could do it myself. My son said, oh, I'd like to go anyway. So we went, and we were there for the ceremony.
What did that mean to you, that the Congress of the United States is singling you out as saying you did something worth celebrating?
It meant a lot to me that we were getting the recognition that we deserved. On the other hand, we're sitting back there several rows back, and the politicians are sitting in front of us. And I told my son, I said, where were they when we needed them? But it was good because Danny Noe gave a nice speech.
I was going to say, he's the one politician you couldn't blame because he's a Medal of Honor winner.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to forget to say something important. Thank you. Thank you for serving our country, and thank you for telling us this story from your perspective. When it comes to the Americans of Japanese ancestry who served our country during World War II, what gives you the most pride, and what do you think is the biggest thing that the rest of us who weren't around then need to know and remember?
I'm glad I served. My feeling is it opened the doors for the rest of our children. They're doing things that we wouldn't even think of doing now. So it's life is easier, even though I know that they face discrimination once in a while. So I think we opened a lot of doors. That was because the Nisei soldiers did a good job. The guys in the MIS did a good job. The other thing is I want to make sure that this story is told over and over again. Something like the Jewish Holocaust. If you don't talk about it, they're going to forget.
And it could happen again.
It could happen again. The fact that I let you interview me and the fact that I've been interviewed before, and it's because I want the rest of the America to know what we did during the war, that we're Americans just like anyone else that was born here, even though we look different.
Amen. And when you say you opened a lot of doors, tell me if I'm wrong when I say this. Aren't some of the other doors that you opened the gates to those internment camps? Even though you never had to spend time in them, what you guys did overseas made it impossible for the government to ignore and really force their hand in releasing those people who had been wrongly imprisoned.
Yeah.
What would you say you're most thankful for, Sam?
That I have a good family. Thankful that I'm blessed the way I am.
And what a blessing for us to hear his story. He mentioned the man from his company, Spud Munamori, who was the first Nisei veteran awarded the Medal of Honor. We also talked about another, Sam's friend Joe Sakato, who had his decoration upgraded to the Medal of Honor decades later. You can link to Sakato's story at hometownheroesradio.com. As of today, there are only 66 Americans still living who have received our nation's highest honor. Only one of them is a Nisei veteran. Our friends listening on affiliate KIVA, the Rock of Talk, in Albuquerque know all about Hershey Miyamura, the pride of Gallup, New Mexico, who served with Sam Terasaki in the 100th and 442 toward the end of World War II, but he went on to earn the Medal of Honor during the Korean War. The National Medal of Honor Museum just launched its annual initiative encouraging all of us to write letters to surviving Medal of Honor recipients. Maybe you'd like to send one Hershey's way. Maybe to all 66. You have some time now because the goal is to have them all in by National Medal of Honor Day next month. And I have all of that info linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com. Whether you've ever participated in a Day of Remembrance observance before, why not take the initiative to do it this year and spread the word? Because a giant component of making sure that tragic history never repeats itself is simply making sure that those elements of history are not forgotten. Thanks so much for listening to Hometown Heroes today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again of something our Nisei veterans know all too well. Freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.